Episode number 226 with Steve and Mike. Welcome to the Heads Up Poker Podcast. This is Steve Barton.
How you doing, Steve?
Pretty damn good. How you doing yourself?
I am unkilled by a nasty virus so far.
I'm unkilled as well. Unkilled as well. Do you see the latest Tom Hanks has it now?
I know, man. It's craziness.
Yeah. I feel like they just kind of like got to accept that it's here and just let it run through the populace and I don't know. Are we really even containing anything?
I don't know. I'm not an expert in pandemics. This is one of the few things I cannot speak about confidently, Stephen. That's kind of my perspective, but I mean, if it works, it works. I mean, you know, it makes sense. Although, like you said, it's like, there's only so long we can keep people away from each other.
Yeah.
If it's going to take over a year to come up with medicine in that time period, a lot of us are going to bump into it. But, you know.
Yeah.
You would feel differently if a loved one were to catch this recently and it could have been avoided, you know.
That's true.
My mother, I mean, she's old and she also has pulmonary issues.
Okay.
So like people with compromised breathing, lungs and stuff, those are like the ones that are most in trouble.
Most susceptible, yeah.
Yeah, so she would probably not survive it. So,
you know, that's a good point. My dad
semi-quarantine, yeah.
Yeah, my dad is not exactly a pillar of health, and he smoked for probably 50 years. He quit a few years ago. Sounds kind of like your dad, except mine was able to kick it.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's got COPD and emphysema. And yeah, you're right. That could be fatal if he caught it. I hadn't thought of that.
Well, Steve, if everything goes to shit and there's chaos because of all this, I'm glad that I've got some place to. We'll head up to the hills. We'll go to the old country. We'll go to old America where things are, you know, things should be a little safer. Anyways, I would think.
You'll have a spot at my folks' house. They're out in the boonies. I think we'd survive quite well.
There we go.
Yeah.
congratulations.
Thank you. I finished. I ran the marathon. That was an accomplishment. It was fun, man. It was fun. Just prepping the day before. I mean, like it was a challenge. I want to thank Andrew Pieper and Michael Robinson for the sweat. The bet was 457. So I knew heading out I can't remember how many seconds it was. I think it was 457.34 or something. I may not be remembering right, but I just had it in my head. I'm like, okay, if I cross that finish line and I see, 456, I won. And, I was a little bummed. I didn't get up. I was asking for 2K of action and I got a little over 10% of that. And I was like, I was a little bummed, but I didn't get down to 157. I got down to, so I lost 7 pounds and I got down to 160 on race day. So I'm kind of glad nobody took me on that bet. Days before, no alcohol, just very healthy eating, like vegetables, fruit smoothies, like a lot of carbohydrates. You want to carb load and get as many of those
good carbs
into your muscles so that you can use it during the race as possible. So you got to do this days before. Lots of water, at least a gallon a day, sometimes more, and then that way you're fully hydrated as well. And so I did that, and then I got sick the day before. So I was a snotty mess, you know, sneezing and coughing and scratchy throat and probably caught the coronavirus.
Yeah.
And, so, I didn't get much sleep that night. I got about 3 hours of sleep. And then I woke up the morning of, woke up, you know, we lost 1 hour with the time change. And so got down, woke up about 4 o'clock, I think, left at like woke up at 3:30, left at 4:30, and then got down to Santa Monica and met Andrew Pieper. And so he came out from Vegas. He was playing tournaments all night and then drove straight through from Vegas to Santa Monica. And then we picked him up and left his car down there. And then we drove to Dodger Stadium, which is where it starts. And so I get there and, you know, there's 20,000 people in Dodger Stadium parking lot ready to run this race, you know?
Yeah.
And so we, they dropped me off. And the plan is they're going to meet me at mile 10 where I can change out my shoes, get some more goo packs and stuff, you know, and then again at mile 20, and then I'll meet them at the finish line. And so I get all my shoes on, everything, you know, get my music going. Oh, and my phone broke, so I had to borrow my mom's phone, but at least I could listen to music. And then the elites take off, you know, they take off at 7 o'clock. And then everyone kind of filters through. I wait till the back third of the pack or whatever. That way it's just not a mad rush, because you got to get 20,000 people through something that, you know, that's 20 feet wide. It takes a while. And so I take off and I'm on my pace and feeling good and just keeping my heart rate. I wanted to keep it around like low 130s. I get to the first 10 mile. It's been about 2 hours. And so I got to pick up the pace a little bit, but some of that first 10 miles is some uphill course. So I expected to be a little bit behind there. Change out my shoes, get some water, and take off again. And it is a neat experience. If you're listening and you're like, you know, I kind of want to run a marathon, I tell you, it's quite an experience. The whole route, people are holding signs and, you know, holding out little, you know, a guy will come with like two tables and just have this giant spread of like, you know, orange slices, cut up bananas, whatever that you can, pickles that you can just grab and then eat as you go along. You know, there'll be people with like a whole tray of like beer. If you want, you can stop and drink a beer with them and then keep going, you know. It's pretty cool. Go ahead. I could tell you, I've been rambling for a while.
No, Stevie, I'm just listening here and looking. So you were unable to pick up the pace for the next 10 miles kind of, was that what happened?
Well, from mile 10 to 20, I picked it up and I started going faster. Once I got to mile 20, I'm like, I still feel good. There's this big thing. The runners kind of hit a wall around like mile 18 to 22. And I hadn't hit it yet, and I was feeling great. And once I got to mile 20, there's in this course, and just because I've studied it, I know that from mile 20 to 22 is, they call it Heartbreak Hill, and it's uphill and it's a bitch. But then after that, from 22 down to the finish line, it's this gradual decline that you can really speed up for. And when going downhill, you got to have strong quads. So for the last month, I've been doing 30 squats a day, and my legs have each gotten an inch bigger. So in prepping for this downhill run. And so I got my goo packs and I start taking off, and I just slammed the hill. There was a gal right alongside, and she was holding out little shots of beer. And I thought, fuck it, I feel great. So I took a shot of beer and then I charged up the hill. Got up to mile 22, and now as I can see it, I had just crested the hill, and I've actually run this route before with the gal that I was dating for a little bit in LA. So I know exactly what the rest of the course looks like, you know? And as soon as I got over the crest of that hill and I started going downhill, all of a sudden my feet lock up, and it's like, I'm running on two bricks, and I'm like, what the hell? And I know I can't stop, or I'm not going to make the time, you know? And I'm trying, and then all of a sudden my hamstrings lock up and I start cramping, and I'm like, shit. So I had to, I thought it would just be a mind over matter thing. You know, you just kind of will yourself through it, but like the muscles physically would not work. And I was like, man. So I had to start walking, and that's when I realized, I'm like, oh, I'm not going to make the time. So at that point, I just kind of enjoyed myself and walked, ran the rest of the way, stopped by. I saw some friends around like mile 23, stopped and shot the shit with them for a while. And then along the way, you know, the last few miles, just kind of stopped at a couple of places and talked to people, and then got across the finish line. And at first I was a little bummed because I didn't make the time, because in my mind there was never a doubt that I would finish the race. But really, I, you know, the next morning my mom snapped me out of it, and she's like, look, you just ran a fucking marathon. Like, let yourself win. I'm like, yeah, you know what? You're right. I did. So it was cool. It was a neat goal. It was long. Holy shit, that was a lot of time spent.
What would Tony Robbins say about this effort? He's the king of self-help, Steve, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I know exactly. I don't know. What do you think he would say?
No, I think you should be very happy.
Yeah.
What is the what is your mindset though? Is this going to be a lifelong passion, the running, or was this a one-time thing?
You know, it's funny. Right after the race, they asked me that. They're like, "Sir, are you going to do this again?" And I said, "Nope, I'll never do one of these again." I was in such pain. The next morning I woke up, I actually felt better. I thought I was going to be horrendously sick because I ran this whole thing with a cold, you know, so I'm doing snot rockets every half mile. And I thought I was just going to be in bed for the next week or something, but I woke up feeling better, which made me question, like, is it really good to take a rest day when you're sick? I ran a fucking marathon and then felt better the next day. You know what I mean? Maybe for 40 years I've been doing the wrong thing when I get sick. I don't know. But I woke up and I'm like, you know what? That was such a fun experience, because you kind of need a crew. You kind of need someone to help you along the way when you're going that fucking far, you know?
Sure.
And it was kind of a neat team event to have Andrew there and to have my mom and dad, and they're, you know, oh, I'm coming up on mile 19. I'll see you guys in 10 minutes. You know, it was a fun experience, and they had a blast too. And if I stick with running, shorter races, like if I do, I don't know, 3 or 4 half marathons a year, which I can do off the couch now, prepping for a marathon after a half marathon, I mean, it's an abbreviated training session, but you can do it in 6 weeks. And, you know, so doing a marathon really wouldn't be that big of an endeavor now, that, because it's taken me a year to go from fucking 3 miles to 26, you know, now that I kind of have that base and the knowledge that I can physically do it without it getting injured. I think I might do one of these a year. It might be kind of a neat tradition, because my folks now have the place in Vegas, and then they go back up to Idaho around this time. This is around when the marathon is each year. They could come out. It was a fun experience. I think I'll do it again.
I had a friend in Connecticut, fellow mailman, who, you know, he did track team in school, and he ran a bunch of marathons.
Okay.
He was doing it quite frequently. And he used it, I don't know, a couple times a year, maybe. He used it as an opportunity to travel too. Like, yeah. He wanted to do like a marathon and see how many states he could do it in.
That's pretty cool.
Hey, let's go to Carolina this year. Oh, there's got one in Idaho, or, you know what I mean? So that could be. You like to travel.
Yeah. When I retire, I'm going to get a pickup and a little trailer and just cruise the US and then probably eventually down in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
And that would be kind of a neat excuse, you know? And if you do one of these, you know, like I could do another one in 2 weeks, you know, and get a better time. And so like, if you're just doing them all the time, it really wouldn't be that big a deal. Once you get into the shape to do it, then you're kind of there, you know?
So what would an average marathoner to stay in shape? What are they doing? Like 5 miles a day and then a 15 mile run every Sunday or something? I mean, what would be?
I don't know what the training schedule would be if you're doing them. Like, let's say you're doing them every 2 weeks. Is that what you're saying?
I guess basically just what for you, what kind of workout schedule would you need to go where basically at any point, if someone said marathon in 2 weeks, you could be okay. I'll finish it. You know, I'll be there.
Okay. I would need more time than 2 weeks. I would need a month and a half. And basically, yeah, I already signed up for a 5K this coming Sunday. So a week after the marathon, I'm going to run 3.1 miles. This should be interesting because I can run as fast as I... 3.1 miles? Are you kidding me? That's nothing. So I'm curious to see how quick I can run it. Yeah, so I'm going to keep doing these like 5, 10Ks, half marathons. Let's say I did a half marathon and someone said, we got a marathon in a month and a half. I would run... So I'd run the half, that'd be 13.1. Then the following weekend, I'd do a long run of probably 16. And then the week after that, maybe 18. And the one after that, 20. And then I would taper down and I would do like 12 miles and then 8. And the following week would be the marathon. I might be off by 1 week there, but that would be about it. Is you go long, 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 and then back down. And during the time that you taper is when you're resting. And I could tell it really worked because, man, I kicked ass for 22 miles. And I found out what I did wrong, too, and why I locked up. I met a guy, he's a fireman, and he ran the marathon in his turnouts and an SCBA and a helmet. Hmm. And, you know, he finished same time I did. And I was in shorts and a tank top. So I talked to him afterwards and I was like, you know, I was kicking ass until mile 22. And then, you know, the easiest part downhill and I just locked up and there was nothing I could do to get through it. And he's like, yep. He's all, he said, sodium. I was like, sodium. He's like, yeah. And he pulls this little salt thing out of his pocket. It looked like something the size of chapstick. It was clear. And in it, you could see, you know, that like pink Himalayan salt.
Yep.
It looked like that. And he's all, I just take one of these little nugget rocks of salt every couple of miles. And he said, what that'll do is that'll keep your electrolytes in your muscles and they don't get flushed out. And he said, let me guess, you drank a lot of water during the marathon. I said, I drank a cup at every single stop, which is like every mile. He's all, yep, that's exactly what happened. He said, you didn't eat much salt prior to the race either, did you? And I said, no, I purposely avoided it. He's like, yep. He said, yeah, you got it. He's like, you know how you carb load before a race? I said, yeah. He's like, you got a sodium load. I'm like, okay. And he's like, you don't want that cheap, like table salt. He said, get that pink Himalayan one. It's got like some vitamins in it.
No, you can get water poisoning.
Oh, by drinking too much water?
But if you have nothing in your system but water, if that's what you're trying to replenish it with, you need something else in there.
Or yeah. He mentioned those like kind of Gatorade shots along the way. He said, those are good. He said, but if you sodium load before the race and then you do it during the race with these little salt tablets, he said, you won't cramp up. I was like, nice. Okay. So good to know.
Did you have, who was the strangest looking person you saw pass you on the course? Was there like a 250 pound woman where you're going up that hill on mile 20, who's just floating by you?
Yeah, there was some of that, that it was, I really had to swallow my pride because yeah. it was when I hit the wall, there was some, I'll never forget the 200 pound Mexican lady that was probably 60 years old and she passed me. And I thought, what the fuck? Are you kidding me?
Right.
I mean, there's some of these runners that you would just, like you would see them in the supermarket and you would just be able, they just have no business even entering a 5K, let alone a goddamn marathon. Right. And when they passed me, it was, I really had to check my manhood. It was, that was a tough one to swallow. There was a guy that ran the race in a freaking, it was like a Teletubby outfit. I mean, the thing, it was one of those puffy outfits that you'd see out front in the ghetto, you know, where they're directing people into Julio's auto insurance.
Right.
One of those, he ran in that. Yeah, I told you about the fireman that did it in turnouts. There was a guy that ran it in like one of those Aztec warrior costumes with the giant headdress doing the maracas. There was a girl that ran it bouncing a basketball the whole way.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't imagine having to do that. That would just suck.
At least you didn't see like Clayton run by you, like running backwards and flipping you off. I'm trying to think, what could I know you out there? You know, it's funny. I'm looking up online, you know, world record times. Mm-hmm. What do you think the world record time is for an 80-year-old man?
I'll say
the same guy must be a legend. He has the fastest marathon at age 75, 80, and 85.
Okay. And I'm assuming it went slower from 75 to 80 to 85. I'll say 75, 80, 85. You got all the times right there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. 75, I'll go. Oh, man, world's fastest. Jesus, this is stupid numbers, but I'll go 2.5, 235, 240.
That's a little too fast. I thought this would be much quicker than you think. It was 3 hours and 4 minutes is 75.
Okay.
Three hours and 15 minutes he ran at age 80, and at age 85, he ran 3 hours and 56 minutes.
Okay.
Sounds pretty good for an 85-year-old man to me,
Steve. Yeah, no shit. That's I know the world record's just under 2 hours. They just broke it. But yeah, it's a beast. I don't think I've ever done anything that physically difficult. And this is coming from hand crew training, where we were training to just kids getting on a helicopter and flying into some remote place, dropping us off, and then we got to put the fire out with like shovels. It's, you know, we went through training like that, and I think this was more physically difficult for one day in that time period than I've ever done in my life. It was tough and painful, super painful.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome, Steve. You've inspired me.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah, I'm sorry I couldn't be there, but, you know.
Yeah, it's all good.
I just didn't give a shit. No, I just hate doing. Andrew actually stayed down here Sunday night.
Oh, did he? Okay.
At my place, he came through. We just watched it. Yeah, he had told me that he had been driving around. Like, he'd driven to Vegas twice, round trip.
Wow.
And then went down there and came here. And, yeah, he sat down on my couch, immediately closed his eyes and fell asleep. He was exhausted.
I bet. Didn't he have to work on Monday?
He did.
Wow.
He went to the alarm set for 5 o'clock, and he picked up and got out of here. So,
holy shit. What time did he get down to your place?
I forget, at like 8 o'clock or something. I mean, he probably got to the area earlier. I was with my son.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Wow. Right on. Yeah. He seemed like he had a blast. You know, it was fun. It was a neat experience.
So what else is going on, Steven? How much poker do you play, Steve? When was the last time you had did a Sunday grind? That's just old news, right?
Yeah, I just haven't played in, it's been several weeks, maybe over a month. It's unlike me. I've just been so busy with work and then prepping for the marathon. It's going to be nice to have some extra free time and not having to go out and run fucking 15 miles one day or something, you know?
Sure, of course. What was I going to say? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Quickly go back to the virus. Will the World Series be canceled this year? A lot of people are saying that poker is about the worst venue you can have for people passing a virus around with the chips. You know, you're touching. You know, technically, you could go to a stadium, and if you're not, you know, if you're not shaking hands every left and right, you know what I mean? Well, yeah. I mean, if you go to a stadium, it's going to be, you know, every time you touch a guardrail, you know.
Yeah, but at least it's open, you know, like a poker room, especially the WSOP. Jeez, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, you're right. That's about the absolute worst thing that you could do if you wanted to.
I mean, just because it's so snug there, just walking from the pavilion to a bathroom, you're going to make physical contact with like 10 people. You know what I mean?
Oh, and you have people coming in from all around the world.
That's true, too.
Yeah, everyone's touching chips. Yeah, if your goal was to get the coronavirus, I think that would almost assure it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I hadn't thought of that.
Them canceling the World Series of Poker would probably be actually good for me, but I mean, right now I'm saying all the things. Well, I need to play this long. I need to have a win rate, and I'm all gonna, you know, gonna sell so much at this. I'm not gonna go at all unless I can sell this. But you know me,
yeah.
How much I love the World Series of Poker, so I would be just going out there and, you know, indifferent to some good financial planning. So if it's canceled, it's probably better for me. I don't know. Yeah, it does. But I'm also just worried about the local card rooms getting shut down.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that either.
I mean, what am I going to fucking do, Steve? I mean, I can make it probably if I had to just sit in my house for 6 weeks, I could probably make it, maybe. That'd be pretty tough.
You could do Uber. You could probably get the coronavirus that way too.
Yeah, that's just as bad. Yeah, I mean, there's already a report of that. Some guy who drove, an Uber driver who drove someone to the hospital, caught it. Someone called an Uber driver because they were feeling sick, wanted to drive to the hospital. The Uber driver picked him up and caught it.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know, Steve. I know you're a positive person, so you're probably thinking, none of this is. The men of science will solve this quickly. but you never know.
Yeah.
Trump, the center of disease control is like, well, we probably within a year, but you got to go through all the trials, hopefully within a year and a half. I mean, if you can, do all this stuff, the quarantine, you can stop the growth of it for sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he's like explaining how it's, it could take a year to year and a half. And Trump's like, 3 months sounds better. I mean, like, you can just will it to happen because he's president. No, give it to me in a couple months. This is why I don't. But even the president, canceling all the flights to Europe and everything.
I was just talking about that with my folks this morning. I got a trip here in a month. I already bought the plane tickets and stuff. I never get the insurance.
I would think that would be a different scenario if you're not missing the flight, if the flight's canceled.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good point.
But, I mean, right now it does seem, though, not hysteria, but it's like nobody was really canceling. The NBA, it just happened yesterday like wildfire. No, everybody, It's like, the Ivy
Stock
League.
Stock market's taking a shit. NBA, apparently NBA is canceling their games. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Wow. The NCAA. So much money.
Yeah. The NCAA. Yeah. I was watching one of the big soccer games the other day, and there's, the stadium is empty. It's kind of a weird, phenomena. So, we'll see how long it disrupts, but there seems to be like a limit, okay. Now if it spreads, obviously if there's a couple of reports, like in the town I live in, they're going to shut the school down, I'm sure. But are you going to shut it down for over a year?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like at some point you just have to, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that. You're right though. We've all seen that room. There's hundreds of poker tables and thousands of players in a small, cramped environment.
I mean, it's already half disgusting, the place.
Constantly exchanging chips literally every second.
I mean, from every card room across the country, your best three or four players certainly arrive in Vegas. And then I'm pretty sure your three or four with the most overweight with the worst hygiene are also making sure to make it into town.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And always securing seat 5.
Yeah.
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 Just precisely. Somehow every time, which is always the seat right next to you.
So, yeah, I don't see how they can make any sort of do anything to change that. I mean, I guess you could say like gloves don't help. Like the disease, it doesn't have to be on your hands to move the virus around.
Yeah.
It can live on the sofa. It can live on steel. It can live anywhere, pretty much. So,
it stays alive for a long time too, right?
Yeah. I mean, they say if you just avoid touching your face. Now, I was playing cash the other day and a few of these guys, they made a deal. If you see someone else touch their face, they owe you $1. So, I mean, I wasn't part of it. And it's amazing how often I'm touching my face or my, my head.
Unconsciously. Yeah. You don't even know you do it.
So, you would need to like totally like reprogram yourself to.
To not touch your nose or your mouth.
And Steve, I have no sense of how old I am. Like in my mind, it's like, you know what I mean? I'm young. 14. There's no problem, but I'm 49. I, this is probably not good for me. But
Yeah. So how you been? How are the cards treating you?
So a little stretch here. Kind of had a couple of bad days I'm kind of digging myself out from.
Okay.
But I don't know. I made 600 last night. It was a crazy game. You know, there's a guy shoving 800 blind a few times.
Wow.
There's one guy, yeah, he's just action to the max, really, really rich. There's not a lot of guys that show up like this. At one of the LA card rooms, mm-hmm. I mean, one of the Southern Cal card rooms. And this was a pretty low buy-in. There's like two guys who got like $6,000 in front of them.
Cause wow.
You know, this guy probably lost 15K, you know.
Okay.
And just so-so.
Okay. Just could never get a hand when he's just shoving 800 blind. Just look down at 10-3.
Well, I did a couple times, but then I would give it away elsewhere. I don't know if I played too many hands just terribly. There's one guy who was, I don't know, I guess he's pretty tight. He squeezed beforehand, and I call with king-queen off. And I can't remember. Somebody made it 20. I called. This guy made it like pretty small, like 60. Okay. So I called. So there's under 200 in the pot, and he just on a king high flop. He just shoved, and like 400, like 2x pot, or something. And I felt I had to call. I mean, there was a flush draw out there, but like does he ever have anything other than ace king? I mean, he had or aces. I mean, pretty much no. I mean, it's hard to say, but this guy hadn't sat down long, but he was just kind of camped out waiting for a hand, okay. I thought. And so that was one bad hand. Another one, I like raising rivers, Steve. I don't know. I like raising rivers without blockers and without a plausible story. Let's put it that way. So.
Oh, we didn't have it.
No, there's a different hand where somebody bet like 100 on the river and I made it like 400.
Okay.
And I kind of got unlucky. The guy missed his flush. I didn't think he was real strong, but he hit an ace on the river. I thought there were more aces in my range kind of thing. So it wasn't actually, it was a thinking play, if I want to say, to be honest. I thought it wasn't horrible, but those are the things where maybe you don't do that when the game is so good. You just hold on to every chip.
Yeah.
You know, play against a couple certain players sometimes.
Right on. You gonna play today?
Yeah, well, I gotta this is old school Steve, me loving the podcast. I didn't get home till last night till 7.
Wow.
I had to set the alarm to get up. Yeah, so I you know.
Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah, so I'll be going back to sleep, and then yeah, I'll be going in later. Hopefully the game will be as good as it was before.
Right on.
Steve, this is, I should probably stop talking about the weed. My son's going to hear, but you know, if my son hears this, your daddy did not try anything until he was 45 years old.
Yes.
Now he's earned the right to sit around and be a stoner. Well, not really, but, Steve, well, this is, I've had a couple incidents, let's put it this way, at the casino, I can't even really talk about, believe it or not. I mean, I'm an open book and I don't want to talk about it. That tells you kind of, they were probably a little crazy.
Okay.
Let's put it this way. Well, I blacked out. Like, I've looked it up. It's not supposed to be something that ever happens with weed. Sometimes you'll pass out or you get sick.
Okay.
Like, I vaguely remember certain things happening.
Now, do you mean you blacked out like you fainted, or do you mean you blacked out just no memory?
I can't remember. Well, yeah. I mean, I just don't want to get into too deep. I basically got angry with this one guy and, you know, started yelling and just saying all sorts of, and I went off my other medication for a while. Like, well, you know, I'll save $30 in copay by not taking my mood control med, because all I need is weed. And I did this without a doctor's order, and I really went bananas. I don't know. Anyone who goes to the casino probably heard of it. But I would I was yelling at a guy, and like afterwards was over, I was like thinking it was like 6 minutes long or something. Like, it was like a rant. Someone's like, no, you were going for like almost 2 hours.
Oh God.
I mean, I kind of, and like, I asked someone about it, and they were telling me some of the things I was saying, and I'm like, do not remember saying them. I really don't.
Oh, well,
And then, so I told myself I'd never get the high again. And then, you know, there's another one recently, which was, I don't even know how to explain it, but it ended up, you know.
Ended Were you up able with me- to make amends and talk to him later?
I don't know. That's kind of a complicated situation. But then again, I had not a semi-repeat situation, and that I was brought to a point of like really high emotionality. You know, I can't get any more specific than that. So, and like basically both of these incidents for most people would be so life-changing, they would never step in this casino again because they wouldn't want to look at people. So humiliating. And like, I mean, seriously, like it's that level of stupid. So- was on display, but I got nowhere else to go. So, you know, the last few weeks I've just kind of put my headphones on, I've withdrawn a little bit socially, and then I'll have to get back into the groove of things. Cause I really got no choice.
Yeah.
I really don't. I mean, no, I mean, I'm going to try to play elsewhere for a lot, but yeah. Anyway, so do I need to, that's my question. Do I need to see a doctor probably, or just, it really is legitimately, there's like 3 days in a row where I didn't take it, or I took it really late because I knew I'm going to go home in a couple hours. This would be perfect for sleeping. But my physical issues are legit. I'm not making this up just as an excuse to get high. I mean, I've got a really bad back, and it usually,
I can completely understand how sitting for 50 hours a week for years now is. Yeah. That's right. Got to be painful.
My shoulder's now jacked up. It's just, you know, but, on the other hand, it really does feel like it's okay. My body or my mind. Cause yeah, I'm just forgetting things too.
Yeah.
Like I'm literally like, I could be in, not just making a comment, but like being a fairly detailed conversation. And then I hear a sound to my side and then turn around and I have no idea what we were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just totally lost.
Like, yeah. So there's, I do feel like it's doing brain damage.
Yeah.
Which would be a very compelling reason to stop.
Yeah.
But like I said, I mean, other than a couple of Google searches, I'm trying to, the high level of, you think pot's supposed to like chill you out, but there is like certain people, depending on your, you know, chemical makeup, it does kind of the opposite. It'll make you, I mean, there's been a couple of times I've already discussed that where I've just reached such levels of, sometimes getting high is just different than it is for a lot of people. For me, it's just, it's horrible experience because I'm forced to look at myself so critically, finally look at the truth that I, you know, sounds overly dramatic, but you know,
no,
I just realize
on shit and yeah.
Well, yeah. More even, I mean, I just understand what a wretched creature I am, how horribly I've treated people. I mean, that's,
You're not a wretched creature, Mike. You don't have a bad bone in your body, man.
Oh, Steve, I don't know. You're too you're too kind, and your fellow man.
Yeah, that's a tough one because you're kind of torn between, well, do I just sit in pain while I'm playing, or do I you know, at least make it manageable, but I run the risk of having a breakdown.
I mean, of course, that's not an entirely truthful narrative. I like being high, of course. But, yeah, I mean, but when it is good, I have a great time. A lot of times it's just a mix. Like I'll be laughing and, you know, then all of a sudden I'll slow down. And it's the normal polarization of emotion that I guess I would normally feel, but sometimes it's just really dramatic. The joy is really intense. And then when the grief is, you know, pretty bad too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, speaking of grief, Steve, here's something else I want to talk about.
What's that?
I mean, I've told you about the woman I'm obsessed with, the ex, I can never love another. It's all true, but it's growing even, like I said, because internally I've decided I'm not making any effort at like any other women, but long term, especially when I'm high, man, I do nothing but think about this woman, just like replay every moment of our 2 years together. And imagining every scenario of getting us together. I mean, I guess it's obsession. I mean, I would call it love, but I think I just want to know if she's married, Steve. If I hire a private investigator, it's not illegal, right? I don't have access to that information. I'm talking about once a year. I if her husband's smart, there's no way he's leaving her. But you know, you never know. In their 50s, so he might cheat on her. And I just want to check in once a year to find out if she's still married.
Yeah.
And then if she wasn't, she might probably, there's a 99% chance she still would not want to talk to me. But this is where I'm at, Steve. I don't know. It's like my plan for happiness. I'm just like, oh yeah, I'm just going to just chill out for the next 12 years until we're together. You know what I mean? I'm still thinking long terms, you know?
Yeah. Instead of the private investigator though, I would go with the, you know, go to Walmart, get yourself like one of those little teddy bears and then tie a note on it and kind of camp out in front of her house, just leaving it on the porch. So, you know, when she's coming in to get it. And as soon as she picks it up, reads the note and turns around to look to see if you're anywhere, you're in the street at this point with your window rolled down in your car and you just peel out.
Right. That's fine. That's good advice. I thought they drive the car on her lawn and smash it into the garage, thereby getting her full
undivided attention.
It's funny. There's a Steve Martin. You know, he's known as not just for his stand-up, his movies, but he's also a brilliant writer. But there's a piece he wrote basically about a boyfriend who's a stalker who's gone mad, but it's in the tone of just like, how you doing? He's like, hon, did you hear from me today? That note with the attached to the brick I threw through the window. Yes. Just wanted to say hi. Oh, yes, I saw you at the laundromat. In fact, I was, you know, I mean, that kind of stalking a woman.
I noticed you threw a white one in there with the colors. We can't do that, honey.
Right. Yeah, pretty much all like that. So, yeah, I mean, Steve, I know it sounds crazy, but you know, it's not like I'm talking about approaching her and, you know, trying to befriend her child, like getting a job as a, you know, I just want to know if she's married. And yes, I would like her to know that I'm curious if she's married, but you know, yeah, that's not nice to her. You know what I mean? So the first part though, I really don't see anything wrong with just,
Is she on Facebook?
She does not have a social media imprint really at all.
I understand the PI now.
Yeah. You know, how far can you drive? Can you fly these drone cameras with technology? Can this one make it all across the country?
Oh, we're talking a distance like that.
I know. I'm just talking about other possibilities. I mean, I don't even know for sure where she lives. I mean, I'm guessing it's in South Carolina still, but I could be wrong.
Okay. Yeah. A PI could find that out real quick.
I would think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't you be a private? You've tried everything else, Steve. Why don't you become a licensed private investigator? Maybe that'll be your next journey.
How's the Bumble going? Anything going there or just?
No.
I've had a few dates here and there, but nothing really worth it.
What happened to the woman you're running with?
Just didn't work out. I don't know. I didn't really feel it with her. She didn't really feel it with me. And, right. Yeah, I don't know. It's tough to put into words. Like, we had a lot of common interests, you know, like running and staying in shape and just going out and doing like touristy stuff, you know, it was fun. But I don't know. I didn't feel any like real emotional thing,
Steve,
there.
Like, be honest. Just say he didn't like her tits. Okay. Don't try the emotional. Come on, Stevie, you're talking to me here, buddy. This is a non-judgmental zone.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I just need to like, it's like my buddy Joe said, he's like, you know, you're really good at getting chicks. You're not that great at keeping them. And I'm like, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I'm picking girls that I'm not like really interested in, or I don't know what it is. I don't know. But
so have you had in the last 2 years any woman you've kind of crushed here? You know, you just kind of cut her off and she shows up at the fire house crying. No, you haven't had any of those kind of issues.
No stalkerish, nothing. No. There was one that I was,
you're probably a good enough guy where you, I mean, I am too, where it's like, especially you get older, like I don't, you know, of course it's been a while now since I've met anyone, but if I'm like with a woman, I know I will not love her and will not marry her. You got to kind of tell her early on once you're in your 40s, don't you?
Yeah.
You can't. Yeah. So I've kind of killed some pretty, you know, women who are attracted to or fun to hang out with, but it's like, you know, again, this is me picturing the negative. Like, I feel like I can know how we're not going to get along. That's the first thing I think about.
Yeah, I
can already see. Well, she's not going to let me. She's not going to tolerate this. You know, part of sort of shit. So
yeah. There was one recent. We weren't seeing each other very long, but you know, it was pretty clear. I'm, you know, I like being single, and you know, I didn't want to give her any bad idea, but pretty quickly she wanted to be a boyfriend and girlfriend, and I'm just like, no.
Right. Well, you told her to just bend over and think about your arrangement.
She just had nothing going for herself, you know.
Both can have a moment of clarity there.
Yeah. There was nothing upstairs. It was, not my type. But I don't know. Maybe something will come across the path. But I don't know. Maybe I need to treat it like everything else. Like I write down my goals, like what exactly I want in a woman.
Well, you don't sound not something you talk about. So you're obviously not in a place of you know, loneliness or whatever, where you're really missing the companionship. That's, I wouldn't say.
I really like kind of living alone, and you know, you can do your own thing, whatever you want. I mean, I do like that. I also like the aspect of having a girlfriend. It's kind of nice to have one person that you really get to know, and you know, spend time together doing things you enjoy. I like that as well.
Right. That's beautiful, Steve. You fucking loser. Oh, wait, sorry. I'm just kidding, Steve. That's the way it should be.
Yeah. But I don't know. But I do like being with someone that runs. That's kind of cool because you can spend time doing that.
How about, not to bring up your ex-wife again, Steve, what did you enjoy? I know she was like your physical dream, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what did you enjoy doing with her? Did you guys have like movie night? I guess you both liked food. She appreciated you were a good cook. Could she cook too?
No, she wasn't a very good cook.
Right.
What did we enjoy doing together? We really liked flying. We go flying a lot.
Okay. That's right.
We
traveled some together?
Yeah, we traveled a lot together. Her being a stewardess was pretty convenient and cheap because I remember we went to Aruba first class for $50 there and back. It was just like unbelievable deals.
How about when you're on vacation though? Does she like you probably, do you want to hike and travel and this stuff? And she just wants to maybe do a little shopping and sit on the beach or what is?
Yeah. When we'd go on vacation, most of the time we both like to go to the beach. She would enjoy like kind of going out and exploring, like shopping, like you said. And if there was a card room in town, I'd play cards. She was pretty, looking back, it's obvious, but she was pretty insecure. She didn't like being, alone, you know? So
she's next to you. Yeah. When you're going around without any real desire to spend time with you as much as just, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it was
not to be alone. Yeah.
Not to be alone. Yeah. 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 So I've learned that I need a woman that's independent like that. That's not, I guess it's everybody does. You need someone that's not needy. Neediness is not attractive.
Right. Yeah. I guess I'm the same. I've always said I like a woman who likes to read.
Yeah.
Just, so I don't have to entertain her.
Yeah.
I mean, the other hand though, but I'm very, you know, but I do want her, you know, also to be like there with me when I want to sit by the couch and, you know, kind of stuff. So when I want it, you know, selfishly, but,
Yeah. That's kind of what it worked out with that gal in LA, the runner was, it was like, she was like, well, I need to see you more often than once a week. I'm like, well, we're fucking 65 miles apart. You know what I mean? Like you come up, spend the weekend. I go down, we spend the weekend and it's only been 3 months, honey. Like, it sounded like she wanted to move in together. Like,
right.
Hold the brakes here, sweetheart. Like, right. She's like, you didn't text me goodnight last night. And I'm like, doesn't fucking work. Like, you need me to text you? Like, this is not who I am.
Right.
Especially way so early. That was, just not my type. Too neat.
Playboy Barton's coming out. So this isn't a strategy. Like, you know, these women who are, you ignore them, they like you more.
There's something to that.
I don't know how to do that.
I think there is something to that. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what do we got? What do we got coming down the pipe with guests? Anything good here?
I'm excited to get on. I'm going to bring on the guy that taught me stocks. His name is Randall. And
okay, yeah.
I think this might be an interesting time too, because the stock market has just been completely taking a shit with this coronavirus. And then I almost bought one last night, or not last night, yesterday. And I'm really glad I didn't, because I took a shit again this morning. Went down like 10%. I'm like, woo, saved myself some coin there. Yeah, I'm kind of waiting for it to bottom out. And then I just want to load, because this is exciting times.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that might be one of those episodes you might want to do just the two of you. I don't know. Because yeah. I might just be, how dare you take $5,000 from my little Stevie here, you fucking charlatan.
Yeah, so I want to get him on. Who else would I, you mentioned Veronica before.
Yeah, I'd like to get her back on. Be kind of curious. She went from kind of the periphery to the center of the poker universe right after we talked to her, Steve. I know.
And she did.
About this, and now she's still... I mean, she's pretty brilliantly funny. So she always has a lot of, but I don't know. She's got her own podcast now, I think.
Oh, does she?
Okay. Yeah. So, who knows if she has a time for us, dear Stevie, but,
Andrew Brokus would be a good one. He's got a bunch of new videos on TPE.
Get him and Carlos on together. Maybe.
Yeah. You've mentioned that. That would be a good,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know. Just some ideas. You know, I was also thinking, you know, this could be a good one, is to get Clayton on, and I'm doing some writing, and of course I probably wouldn't have the courage about the idea for like comedy routines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys practice them. So we could like workshop. He's the teacher, I'm the student. Like, does this work? How would you tweak it? You know. Basic kind of comedy 101 stuff, I guess, you know.
What is
my shtick? What is my stage presence? You know, maybe I'm funny in a podcast, but in real life, people would just be, not just firing tomatoes, but tomatoes out of a very high velocity rifle. You know what I mean?
Well, if you think of it this way, Mike, I mean, we've got over 250,000 downloads, so you've had that many listens, but we don't get any feedback on this really until, you know, a week later we get a tweet or something, you know what I mean? And we can't tell what people are laughing at or not, but in front of a mic in a little club, it might only be 50 people. That's nothing compared to this.
That's true. But I would want to know that I've got some good shit. Like if I didn't think I could really hit it out of the park, I would be just too nervous. So it'd be something like where I would really be confident and I would do it like 50 times. I mean, it's just hard to know. Like Steve, if you had to sit next to me together every day in a card room, mm-hmm. you would probably think, you know what? Narcissistic personality disorder is something I do not endorse anymore. This guy, you know, I'd say about 50% of the people I play with poker all the time have actually agree with me that I am actually just much more interesting than other people and that I should lead the conversation. But there's some people you can say they find it wearying, you know.
Yeah.
They've learned a lot about me and they still might have told my tales, but, you know, I don't have to. I don't know if I'm. Is the worst person when it comes to that in terms of demanding. I'm a good listener at times, Steve, but you know.
That would be good. We should get Clayton on. We'll get you like a little 5-minute bit. And then I would drive down to Oceanside to see this if you found a little comedy room down there.
Yeah, maybe we'll see if Clayton promised me New York, man. I'll just start off in the big city.
Yeah, just throw yourself into the fire. That's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, I'm so confident in my way just to start conversation and bullshit. Like I was thinking basically I have like a routine which would really focus on like talking to people in the audience.
Yeah.
You know, certain comedians will do that. Well, at least breaking it up, you know, just to be like create rapport with the audience. Like, hey, man, where'd you get that shirt?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where are you from? And then just to come off with comic riffs off that. You know what I mean?
There was a comedian that was brilliant that I saw down in L.A., And I went with my brother and my girlfriend at the time. And we went down there, and there was a couple guys that went up and they did their routine. And then this one guy steps up there. He walks up like Dave Chappelle, like he's done this 1,000 times, lights a cigarette, has a beer. And then he just goes around the audience and he's like, "What do you do for a living?" "Oh, you're a plumber, huh?" And then he just start doing like plumber jokes, you know? And then he'd go to the next guy and then he ask, he asked me, "What do you do, farmer?" "Oh, you probably get so much pussy, you can do this and that." And then he starts talking about my girlfriend next to me. And then, you know, he just had the whole room, and he never even like got up there and really did a set. He just did, like you said, like improv with just people in the audience. And just, he was very good.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I don't know, the program, you can kind of tell a lot of people just by looking at them, you know?
Yeah.
You get a line. You get a line of 10 guys together. I can definitely tell you which one's getting the most, pussy here. You know? Yes. I know you can deal this too, Steve. You're going to know who the naughtiest woman in the room is too. A woman who's a good, she's a good last night on earth kind of woman. You know, she's willing to do anything. You know, so that is like something. This might be overly confident and narcissistic to think this, but I think that is something that I would be very good at.
I think so too.
So that would be a possible, not routine, but just to be comfortable on the stage and, you know, have a couple jokes maybe set aside, but.
Yeah. Have a couple in your back pocket that you know are good and you can go to if there's a dead air or something, but.
We'll see. I mean, for the first time, I mean, I used to always have a little pen and paper next to me and at least be scribbling something down every day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like 10 years ago when I wanted to be a writer. Now it'd be nice if I could get back in that mode.
You know, you could probably even just tell stories about you at the poker table. You know, right. A couple of things of your bit. But, you know, yeah, I noticed the most successful comedians, they just talk about their life. You know,
right.
Then it's authentic. Yeah. It's real. It's what they know. And people can feel that.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, for sure.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? You want to do one or two hands real quick?
Yeah, sure.
Just as we, let me see here. Okay. This is a 2-5 game and I have folds to me on the button where I have $1,000 and I have pocket aces.
Okay. Suits.
A diamond and a club.
Diamond club. Okay. The diamond club. All right. 2-5. I don't know. 20.
I made it 25.
Okay. Make it big.
Usually pretty standard open. My one buddy's theory is that during the day he raises to 20 and at night 25. People are gamblier and more, you know what I mean? You know, he's pretty tight. He's always going to have like a range advantage in most situations. So, you know, get more chips in there. The big blind, small blind folds, big blind calls. Big blind, can't remember exactly this. No, I actually do remember, I think, who this was. It just says decent rec.
Okay.
And they have $1,200 to start the hand. So we're 1,000 effective.
Okay.
And the flop is 6-3 deuce, 2 diamonds, and I have the ace of diamonds.
Okay. And we got 52 in the pot?
Yeah.
All right, big blind?
Big blind checks.
Checks. Hero. I don't know. Same bet, or maybe do the down bet like last week, 20 to 25, something like that, maybe 30. I don't know. I mean, is he probably check folding like over cards? We're just trying to get value here from like fours, fives, sevens, eights if he didn't three bet. Is this guy three betting pairs like that, like middling pairs?
I wasn't sure. He'd pretty tight. So no, he might play those carefully.
Okay. like eights and sevens and stuff, he might just call.
I do remember he called real quick, so he didn't consider raising. So usually that takes away ace, king, ace, queen, and probably like nines and tens at least.
Those are nines, tens.
You might flat with, but at least look at. But I bet 30, but I don't. I think someone I remember talking with his hand, the one person I talked with, liked like a pot size bet on this flop.
Interesting.
Maybe kind of polarize yourself a little bit. Because okay. You can get called by a lot more than just like pairs, I think, here. You might get called by king, queen with a king or a queen of diamonds.
Good point.
Like I would probably call it that. And it might be, I don't know, what's the word, a static calling range or not, you know, where it doesn't, the sizing doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah. So if he has 7-6 here for top pair, he's calling 50 and he's also calling 20.
Right. Yeah. Now, if you plan on folding to a check raise, I guess that's, you're saving yourself a couple bucks by, you know, but, you know, I wouldn't be probably folding to a check raise here anyways.
Yeah.
So I think it's something to think about. I think 30 is too small. I think this is a good one to bet bigger on and just start getting some money in that pot.
Yeah.
I mean, we got aces, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. I bet 30 and he calls and there's 112 in the pot. The turn is the seven of clubs and the villain checks.
Okay. Does that put up a second club?
Yes. Two clubs, two diamonds.
Okay. And villain checks. Remember anything about his turn check? Like how he did it quickly, slowly?
No, not too much. I mean, it just, I don't know if it, any hands, most hands he's going to call on the flop though. I think he's calling on the turn, right?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I'd get out another bet out there. We want to get called by flush draws. We want to get called by pairs. Yeah, now we got two flush draws up there.
I bet, I guess it's about three quarters pot. I bet 85.
Okay.
Again, do we want to bet pot here? Like if we bet, I mean, you can just if we go back and change the numbers. If I did bet 50 on the flop and he called, then we'd already have 100. I mean, we'd already have 150 in here.
Yeah.
Then I can make a 150 again here.
Yeah.
Then I could bet 400 on the river. You know, like if we wanted to just, let's assume he had pocket nines, you know what I mean? We'd play this differently for sure. We'd be trying to get more money. But 85 is still a pretty decent sized bet, I think.
Yeah, I think, that 85 to 100, something like that.
Yeah. So, well, 85 is what I bet when he calls and there's now $282 in the pot.
Okay.
And the river is the eight of spades.
Sharp inhale.
So 8-7-7-6, three deuce.
Flush draws missed. And villain?
Villain checks.
Okay. I feel like he's going to be betting like
two pair or better. Yeah. He bet himself here.
Yeah. Two pair or better. I feel like he's betting himself. We're not getting called by the missed flush draws. So that really doesn't matter, but we still might get called by nines or tens if he played them that way. Or if he backdoored like an ace eight or something, maybe he had a draw, like a diamond draw. No, he couldn't have. Diamond draw there. Okay, 8-9 or whatever. We could get called by that. Yeah, I feel like we got to value this. And 282.
Maybe. I checked back,
really?
Which was a mistake. You know, this is me on the short roll, and this is me maybe thinking that, putting him on a narrow range. If this guy's for some reason did have 7-8 of diamonds or, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think he's waking up in a hand though, if he's got me beat. on the turn or betting the river, either raising the turn or betting the river if somehow. So I think, yeah, it's a bet. He had pocket fives, so we won the hand.
Okay. And
afterwards, I said, it sucks to like, I mean, this is something I'm kind of focusing on a little bit with friends we talk about with just these bet fold spots.
Yeah.
Because the bluffing frequency is so low that you can kind of go thinner, you know, or we should be. And this, you shouldn't be focusing on, you know, the hands that beat you, because most of those just aren't in check call mode, you know?
Yeah. I think we got to at least throw out like 100, you know, we throw out 100 bucks right there. I mean, that's 20 big blinds, you know,
right. Well, I would. Yeah.
And then if you get raised, is this average rec really going to raise on the river there as a bluff?
I think, I didn't say average rec. I said decent rec.
Oh, decent rec. Sorry.
So that made me think he's tight though. I don't think.
I remember Alex going through his cash game series on this one, and he's like, when the average player check raises you on the river, he just has it. Just let it go, you know, unless right. You can beat two pair, you got a fold. I think this is a bet fold.
I agree. Poorly okay. played by me.
That's okay. You know what, though? I really like on the flop, though, you're talking about betting bigger, because I think you're right there. Like, he's calling 50 there with pocket fives, just like he's calling you know, he's folding if he had nothing.
Yeah, that's an old thing that I always stuck with me, that Alex V always kind of, he talked about. There's just, you just don't get monster hands that often.
Yeah.
You just have to try to play for stacks and hope they have something or they don't believe you.
Yeah.
You got to, that's what you're trying to get in. You're trying to get your stack in there.
Yeah.
It's not like a tournament where you're like, you know what, if I can get 15 big blinds out of this guy, that's huge. That's a 50% bump to my stack, and I don't want to chase him away.
Yeah.
I want two streets of value. It's always tournaments. I mean, cash games. Try to get stacks in there.
Yeah.
I think. You want to do one more hand?
Yeah.
So I have 2-5 again. I've got 1,300 and something, and it falls around to the button, who has 1,100 and 1,200. And then I also have the small blind as having 1,200 too. So 1,200 effective with two villains.
Okay.
Folds to the button, who makes it 30, and the small blind calls the 30. And I have 9-7 of diamonds in the straddle. We're straddling. I don't know if I said that.
Oh, so the big blind folded?
Yes, and okay. I'm the straddler.
Okay, fold. And Mikey is the straddle. And I'm sorry, how much do you have?
1,300, and I got these guys covered. They each have 1,200.
So we got 1,200 effective. Okay, and what'd you say? You have 7-8 of diamonds?
9-7 of diamonds.
9-7 of diamonds, okay. 9 of diamonds, 7 of diamonds. Okay, tell me about the button and the small blind.
Button is very tight. Yeah, very, you know, typical, like, you know, bum hunter plays 2-3, but comes over for 2-5 when there's a good seat. I don't think this is a squeeze hand. Maybe okay. It is. I think the button might overfold here. That would be the explanation for squeezing.
Okay.
You know what I mean? He might even be folding king, queen off here and some hands he should be defending, especially when we're this deep. You know what okay. I mean? Especially if I size it up a little bit. Yeah. So I mean, a squeeze here, I think squeezing with 9-8 suited or 10-9 suited certainly makes more sense.
But a one gap or not so much?
Those are hands. Yeah. The small blind is, I hadn't played with, seemed to be probably an average rec, which is, I would have him, which, you know, I mean, is like unprofitable.
Okay.
A mediocre. So I call.
Okay.
95 in the pot. And the flop is 10-8-3 with 10 of 8 of spades. And the 3 is the 3 of diamonds.
So we have an open ender and a backdoor flush draw.
Yes.
And small blind, let's see, how much we got in the pot? 90 in the pot? 95?
Yes.
95 in the middle. With 9-7 of diamonds, the flop is 10 of spades, 8 of spades, 3 of diamonds. And it's on the small blind.
Correct. And the small blind checks.
Checks. Now we're on hero. Do we just donk lead into the guy, into the tight guy who has position on all of us?
Yeah, I don't know what, I think this certainly could be a spot for a mixed strategy. I think, check raising wouldn't be terrible.
Yeah.
Donk leading or just check calling. Like I said, this is a button open from this guy. So he's got a, if the button were to bet, he's got a lot of air in his range.
Yeah.
I was thinking check raise.
Yeah.
But I don't know if just the lead would make, would certainly, I can't imagine that's a bad play.
See, yeah, I was thinking a lead of like with 95 in the pot, lead at like 70. And then if we get, I guess kind of regardless of what the turn is, well,
no, you don't want to, you don't want to obviously lose, but you know, we're even deep enough. Well, it would depend on the sizing. If we did bet like 65 here and he made it 200, we actually probably can call. We're still putting, I mean, we're still putting ourselves on, especially these two guys, if they were to raise, I'm incentivized to call because if I hit my hand, I think I'm getting paid like 100%. If they did that, they were very, very strong. But I decided I was in the mood for the check raise, but I checked and the button also checked.
Oh, okay.
And the turn is the three of clubs.
Not ideal. Okay, small blind.
I guess we could say we're the only ones with a three in our range, but I don't know if that's entirely other than ace three suited. They shouldn't have either of those. And but the small blind leads out real small or smallish, 40.
Okay.
My read is he probably has something.
Yeah, like an 8, 10.
Could be small. Could be 8. Could be pocket fours or fives. It could be, you know, when he bets small like that, I think if he's got like pocket eights or tens for somehow, you know what I mean? Like he's going to bet bigger.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say. I don't know. You can't put too much into the bet sizing sometimes with these casual players, unless you've seen them play a lot.
Yeah.
Like some of them, when they bet real small, they're trapping. Some, when they bet small, they're uneasy about their hand, but don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So they just bet. I just decide to flat here.
Yeah.
I think if I raise, I'm getting called a lot. And then, you know, what do I do when I miss on the river? Am I now obligated to blast off, you know, $350 into this river if I were to raise him 150 here, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what makes the most sense, but I just, if this is good, I just decide to flat.
Okay.
And the button folds.
Okay. All right, so we have 80 plus 95 going to the river, which would make it 175.
Yeah. The river is the ace of diamonds.
Okay, small blind.
Which of us, playing range versus range here, which one of us has more aces in our range, you think?
Him. I think him, because he has to have a stronger range calling from the small blind than you do from the straddle.
But he's probably, well, I mean, again, average, don't know, it's weak. He might be calling with many, many, many aces from the small blind. If this was a good player, we'd say, well, he would three bet almost all his aces there. Ace 10 plus, and then the suited wheel aces, and then like, you know, ace 6 through ace 9 just goes into the muck.
I completely agree. Average rec, I think, is calling with those ace nines that the pro would not.
And or not three betting the ace five or the
exactly
or the ace tens.
Yes. We are tracking, sir. Yes. I completely agree.
So he bets 80 into a pot of would we say 175?
175.
I don't know. Again, I felt he took a little while. I thought he was uneasy. Like he couldn't decide if he was going to bet or check. I thought it was a close decision for him. That was my read.
Okay.
And the bet sizing was, I just thought he'd go bigger if he had a hand.
Yeah.
So this wasn't even like, okay, I'm just hoping he doesn't have an ace here. If I decide to raise.
Yeah.
So I saw this as a juicy raise spot because where he doesn't have that many aces and he might even, well, he really shouldn't fold it to an ace if I raise. I didn't want to lose to King High. Fucking, you know, like have him turn over a missed flush. And I'm like, ah, I could have taken it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I decide to raise.
Yeah, for the reasons we were talking about, I think he has more aces in his range. And although instantly when you told me he bet that and what we talked about the aces, I was like, I'll just let this hand go. And but the way you described it, that he wasn't really sure if he should bet or not, you know, that kind of feels a little more like something like an 8 or a 10 or something. You know what I mean? Maybe it's the kind of thing where he had ace two of spades and so he had the flush draw, now he hits his ace and he's like, do I bet it or not? You know, maybe he's thinking, I don't know, is a recreational player there able to fold ace?
No, he's not folding an ace. We're trying to get him to fold a 10 or an 8. So yeah. Does he bet a 10 or an 8 and does he fold a 10 or an 8? If he's always checking a 10 or an 8 here, this is a bad hand.
Yeah.
This is probably not a good raise, or if he's also checking all the crap, like yeah. if he's ever taking a stab here with a king or a queen high or something, then this is a pretty good raise.
Yeah,
because he can't call with that. The raise size I made was too small. If when he bets 80, I think I have to go like pretty big. 360, 375 or something. I only went to 285.
Okay.
So when I do that, there's $540 in the pot and he only has to call 205.
Yeah.
So I mean, not an auto call here, but you know, he only has to be right about 30% of the time.
Yeah.
And he wasn't super happy about it, but he did call with the ace four of spades. So he missed his flush draw.
Oh, so he may have folded the ace if we make it bigger there, if he took a while. Maybe he was already resigned himself to calling.
You might
be right. Maybe you make it like 380 there and he just...
You know, again, this guy might have been doing some hand reading and just like, what aces does this guy have? I mean,
yeah, you know, he just called pre-flop.
He doesn't have any threes. He's going to raise the set, you know, set of eights, set of tens, you know. So, like I said, if he's betting his king high and is betting his tens, thinking he's getting thin value, like if those hands if he's betting those hands and folding the 10, then this is, you know, the bluff is okay, regardless of sizing almost. I don't know, Steve, this is me in tournament mode here. Maybe.
Yeah.
Like I don't even know if these spots you need to take. There are some good pros that would just say, you're not even analyzing this hand.
I think I would have just dumped it on the river.
Yeah, you mean you only had to put $40 in the turn to maybe hit a monster hand to get big. You missed. You got $1,200 against a table you like. Just don't even bother.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm always seeing bluff opportunities and looking for those, you know, capped ranges or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think I wonder about the lead on the flop. I like the way you're thinking with the check raise on the flop. So we got 9-7, the flop was 10-8-3. You know, especially with the backdoor diamond draw, you know, that's kind of neat. But when the check raise doesn't work, I don't know if a donk lead there is good or.
Yeah, the check raise. I mean, you know, if you wanted to start going into all, again, this is going into all the little fun, making the game more fun. You can also check raise and then also rep a flush.
Yeah, exactly. So
you can not only hit your straight. You can
if
also,
the spade hits off, then we can rep that.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of folds on the turn there. Other than, well, you know, I don't know, Steve. Just throwing, you know, a couple of these river decisions. I think this is where you might make the pros make their money, right?
Yeah.
On the river here. And one of them, I missed a value bet. And then on the other one, I had, I think, an overly ambitious bluff, which was not optimal.
Yeah. If he's hesitating to bet that ace there, then maybe he's not betting a 10 or an 8. Maybe he's checking back and hoping you check behind and he wins with his 10 or 8. I don't know.
Yeah, I think an ace might be his only hand that he's betting. But
yeah.
I didn't think he had that many aces. I mean, now that you look at his hand, you know, an ace with the missed flush draw makes sense.
Yeah.
But I don't hate that play. I like how I played that hand more than how I played the ace's hand, where I think I'm losing a little money there.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't be afraid to bet fold because it's only going to happen 1 out of 10 times. You know, the other 90% of the time you make money.
Right. Well, sometimes you do bet their hand too.
True. Yeah. Sometimes you value own yourself. Okay. So 1 out of 10, you value own yourself. 1 out of 10, you lose. And the other 8, you win, you know, right on. Cool. That was fun.
Yeah.
Make me want to go back to the card room.
Yeah. Stay away, Steve. Sickness, misery. And if you're high and stupid like I am, and pathetic and crazy and cruel, at least just shut the fuck up when you go to the card room.
You forget adorable, Mike.
Don't let him see you cry. At least the second time I did it, I was in the parking lot and, you know.
Oh, man.
I was with a woman. She was crying as well. I was actually responding to her crying. It was really a sign of my empathy more than my madness there. You know what I mean? But anyway.
Of course.
Yeah. Stevie, you want to call that a wrap here for today?
Let's do it, homie. Yeah, thanks for coming on, Mike. And thank you for tuning in. Here is your weekly motivational speech.
Life is so short. Life only has only a little time. Although it will continue to go on, you cannot hold on and think that every day is promised to you. We have all experienced great losses in our life. We have all felt that pain of losing a loved one, someone that we cared about. But yet we're still here. And now we must go on. But what is the example that we're gonna leave? What kind of leadership and what kind of leadership qualities do we have? How do we go on? How do we lead the next generation? Hate is not gonna make it work. Being afraid to be truthful to who you are will only limit who you truly are inside. Don't let anyone take that away from you. Don't let anyone take away who you are and how true you are and what you matter in this world to so many other people. Don't be afraid to be honest. Don't be afraid to be truthful. Don't be afraid to be different. Even being different can be difficult to a lot of people. But I guarantee you this, there's nobody in the world that can do you better.